The information provided is not intended to be a comprehensive review of all developments in the law and practice, or to cover all aspects of those referred to. Listeners should take legal advice before applying it to specific issues or transactions.
Hello and welcome to the latest in our series of podcasts looking at the key developments in the debt capital markets. I'm Chris Hardingham, I'm a counsel in the DCM practice of Ashurst, and I'm joined by Tim Morris, a consultant in the DCM practice. Today we thought it would be useful to look at some of the key developments in the debt capital markets since the beginning of the year. Perhaps I could start with the prospectus regulation. Obviously, Tim, it comes into full effect July next year, so there's been quite a lot of activity in trying to flesh out the bones of the regulation and add some detail through the level two measures. Perhaps I could just ask you to comment a little bit on what's happened over the last few months in that space.
Yeah, well, thanks, Chris. I think the most important thing that's happened is at the end of March, ESMA published its final report to the Commission on technical advice on a number of these level two measures, and in particular the form and content of prospectuses and the procedures for their scrutiny and approval by competent authorities. This was quite a detailed report, but I think in summary, the really good news for market participants is that compared with the current regime, ESMA is recommending that very little in fact changes. So continuity is the key word. For people who've become familiar with the approach of the existing level two regulation under the prospectus directive regime, the so-called building block approach, then that approach is going to be carried through into the new prospectus regulation regime, with only, as I say, some sort of tinkering around the edges.
Okay, so generally consistent with the old regime, that's obviously good news. What are the real key changes that the technical advice introduced?
Well, I think the good news is that the changes are reasonably marginal. So again, continuity is the key word. Picking out just a handful of changes to give examples. The first one that springs to my mind is the subject of profit forecasts or profit estimates, where in the current regime it's often quite a burden for people to produce accountants' reports or auditors' reports, which are mandated under the current regime, where any profit forecast or profit estimate is included in the prospectus. And that requirement for an auditor's report or an accountant's report is being dropped according to ESMA's technical advice. So that's one sort of reasonably significant change, I guess. Another change I would mention is in the context of tax disclosure in prospectuses. At the moment, in the current regime, there's a reasonable amount of confusion as to what the precise requirements are for tax disclosure in prospectuses, particularly when they're passported into a number of different member states. And fortunately, ESMA is recommending that this disclosure regime be simplified to essentially be very little more than a general warning to investors to take appropriate tax advice.
And I think ESMA has also proposed a number of changes in relation to the regulatory scrutiny of prospectuses.
Yes, that's right. I think people haven't really focused on that, but ESMA points out in its final report that the Level 1 prospectus regulation, when it talks about the functions of competent authorities scrutinising prospectuses, talks about the completeness and comprehensibility of prospectuses being an important part of the approval process. And in particular, that comprehensibility has been elevated to the same level as completeness in the scrutiny and approval process. And this has led ESMA to recommend some criteria which competent authorities should follow when assessing comprehensibility. And in particular for retail prospectuses, ESMA is recommending that plain language or plain drafting is one of the important criteria that competent authorities should focus on. Now, I think it remains to be seen quite how this will play out in practice, but it could well be that competent authorities will move towards requiring prospectuses to be written in a more straightforward, simple form than perhaps many people have hitherto been used to. Although in the UK, the UKLA has been pushing this form of drafting for some years in relation to certain types of retail targeted prospectuses. So perhaps not so unusual for some UK practitioners.
And summaries and risk factors, any change from the position outlined in the regulation itself?
No, the regulation put forward some quite detailed proposals for summaries and also risk factor sections. And ESMA were quite clear in their final report that they felt enough had been done at level one. And they didn't need to make any further recommendations at level two in those areas.
So I suppose for English lawyers, I guess the question is, in relation to the prospectus regulation, you know, how relevant will this be given the UK is scheduled to leave the EU on the 29th of March next year?
Well, that's a very good point. As things stand at the moment, it's like many things to do with Brexit, it's just unclear. But there are two sort of pieces of legislation, I suppose, or one's proposed legislation and one is the agreement that the EU and the UK are reaching over the terms of the UK's withdrawal. But the UK government some time ago published a draft withdrawal bill, which is currently going through Parliament, the principal purpose of which, apart from formally exiting the EU, is to try and preserve current law to the greatest extent possible the day after the UK exits the European Union in the same form as that law exists on the day before exit. And that, by the terms of its rather technical drafting, would mean that although the new prospectus regulation is technically in effect, it's not actually operative at the time of the UK exiting the European Union, and therefore the new prospectus regulation, by the terms of that withdrawal bill, would not be carried forward into English law after the UK exits the European Union. However, at the end of March, the UK and the EU announced that they've reached agreement on a so-called transition or implementation period, which would last from the date of the UK exiting the European Union until 31st December 2020, which would in effect preserve European law until the end of that transition period in English law. And assuming that transition period is implemented as projected, then when the new prospectus regulation takes effect in the EU in July 2019, it would also take effect in the UK by virtue of that transition period. So it remains to be seen where we end up on that, as both the withdrawal bill and the proposals for the transition period are purely that. They're just proposals at the moment. But that's the current situation.
So in summary, it seems likely that the prospectus regulation will become effective under English law in July 2019, as currently contemplated.
Exactly, assuming that these proposals are carried through, yes. Yeah.
Perhaps we could turn to benchmarks. Again, another area that's seen a lot of activity in the last few months. We all remember the speech by Andrew Bailey back in the summer of last year, where he hinted that the future of LIBOR may not be guaranteed after 2021. I think that's really given quite a lot of impetus to the market in trying to get to grips with the possibility of certain benchmarks ceasing to exist in the future. Perhaps you could just tell us a little bit about what's been happening in the field of benchmarks over the last few months.
Absolutely. I would put it a bit more strongly than that. I don't think Andrew Bailey was just hinting that the future of LIBOR is in doubt. I think he was quite explicitly saying that the FCA was not going to compel benchmark providers to carry on providing LIBOR past the end of 2021. And that really was an electric shock, I think, to the market, and has stimulated a lot of activity since then. So while we haven't seen any real concrete changes in the last 12 months, we have seen a lot of activity going on in the background. For example, IOSCO, the International Organization of Securities Commissions, published a paper at the beginning of 2018 urging all market participants to really get on with it and participate in their relevant working groups with a view to identifying appropriate alternative benchmarks to the to LIBOR and the other IBORs, and also developing methodologies for transitioning from the old benchmarks to the new ones. We've also seen a number of industry bodies such as ISDA, ICMA, AFME and CIFMA publishing various papers, again giving details of their work programs and their suggestions for moving these proposals forward. We've also seen an announcement from the European Money Markets Institute, which is the administrator of one of Europe's critical benchmarks, EONIA, the Euro Overnight Index Average, where they have said that they cannot assure the continuation of EONIA beyond the end of 2020 and cast doubt over EONIA's future. And finally, two things to do with the sterling market. First of all, the Bank of England-sponsored working group on sterling reference rates has come up with SONIA, the sterling overnight index average, as being its preferred alternative for LIBOR. And in particular, at the beginning of April, they announced that they had moved to a reformed SONIA, which the Bank of England was now taking responsibility completely for calculating and publishing. And that's been published on a daily basis since that announcement. And the Bank of England's working group is very much hoping that that reformed SONIA will be the alternative that the market moves to if and when sterling LIBOR disappears. But on that subject, ICE, the benchmark administrator for sterling LIBOR, also made an announcement recently saying that they're looking at working with market participants to identify ways in which LIBOR might be preserved and continue beyond 2021. So I think those are two significant developments to bear in mind when considering drafting contractual documents relating to LIBOR and sterling interest rates.
So whilst we've all been working towards the cessation of LIBOR from 2021, it seems possible that LIBOR will continue to be available beyond that date.
Yes, that's right. I think a lot of people have been assuming since Andrew Bailey's speech that LIBOR was definitely going to disappear at the end of 2021, but that may be a mistaken assumption.
So have there been any other developments in the last few months which are worth mentioning?
Yes, I think there are two other things that I would mention. First of all, the London Stock Exchange has a new market which it's promoting for professional investors in debt securities, known as the International Securities Market, or ISM. And in particular, an important element of this market is that it's now eligible for the so-called quoted Eurobond exemption, whereby issuers of debt securities who are domiciled in the UK for tax purposes can pay interest on their debt securities gross without having to withhold on account of UK tax, provided their securities are listed on an appropriate stock exchange. And with effect from the beginning of April, the London Stock Exchange's international securities market is such a stock exchange. However, it's not so straightforward as it might sound. One of the conditions in the new legislation granting that status to the international securities market is that the relevant market has to be regulated by a stock exchange which is located within the European Economic Area. So assuming that the UK exits the EU and also the European Economic Area as scheduled in 2019, then this new exemption, which has only just become effective, will, in the absence of any further legislation, cease to be effective upon the UK exiting the European Union. I know for a fact that the London Stock Exchange is lobbying the UK government on this point to ensure that this exemption doesn't disappear on the UK exiting the European Union. So I mentioned there were two things to talk about. That's one of them. The other thing is the PRIIPs regulation, the package retail investment and insurance-based products, which came into effect at the beginning of 2018. A little noticed aspect of the PRIIPs regulation is that it gives member states the option to require in their domestic legislation pre-notification of any key information documents or KIDs that are published under the regulation for use in their member states to be pre-notified to the competent authority of that member state. So far as we're aware, only three member states have taken up that option, that is Belgium, Italy and Finland. So they all require pre-notification of kids before they're used in those countries. And there are a number of other member states which have published proposals for adopting that option. And from memory, those other member states are Portugal, Luxembourg, Slovenia, and Croatia.
Thank you, Tim. So another busy few months in the world of debt capital markets.
Indeed.
You can find more information on all of these topics in the latest Capital Markets Quarterly Update available on the Ashurst website. Thank you very much.
The information provided is not intended to be a comprehensive review of all developments in the law and practice or to cover all aspects of those referred to. Listeners should take legal advice before applying it to specific issues or transactions.